All rise. The Honorable Chief Justice and Justices of the Supreme Court of Ohio. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
You may be seated. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case is 2014-228, State of Ohio versus Marlon Clemens. For the appellant, Mr. Sweeney.
Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court, my name is Colin Sweeney with the Cuyahoga County Public Defender's Office. I represent Marlon Clemens. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. The question in this case is a fairly narrow and specific one, and that is whether or not a criminal complaint accompanied by an arrest warrant constitutes an official accusation or a formal charge such that the filing of the complaint is the starting point for a constitutional speedy trial analysis. I submit the answer to that question is it does constitute a formal charge, and there's several reasons that support that, including this court's jurisprudence, the rules of procedure, the Ohio General Assembly's statutes that have been enacted, and common sense and good policy.
Counsel, let's deal with the real world of Cuyahoga County. I'm remembering back to a case that we had a good long while ago in which a person was served with a summons notified, the complaint. It was a criminal complaint. She never came to court. 8 years goes by. Now, would that be different than your situation?
Obviously, the facts and then
and that's a fairly common occurrence, as I understand, in Cuyahoga County, that you don't lock everybody up the minute there's a criminal complaint filed, that they're given a notice to appear, a notice what the criminal charge is, and then they're just no-shows.
I would say, actually, a quite common occurrence is that a criminal complaint is filed and they're not given notice of that fact, and that's actually what happened in Mr. Clemens' case. It's not like they attempted to serve a summons on him, they didn't send the criminal complaint to him. They didn't do anything. They just filed it. The arrest warrant was sitting. And then some time goes by, and he's eventually arrested on another case.
How much time went by?
Between the original, it was about 7 months from when he was originally charged.
7 months between the complaint and the arrest warrant being issued?
Oh, no. The complaint and the arrest warrant were issued on the same day. They were issued on August 6th of 2009.
Right.
He was ultimately arrested in March.
7 months later.
Yes, that's about right. Correct.
Okay, and where's the prejudice, if any, here?
Well, first of all, the first question is whether or not we should be analyzing this constitutional speedy trial claim from the date of the complaint. And assuming that this court agrees, and I think that Selvidge, this court's prior decision, is on point there, that a criminal complaint does trigger the analysis, then the question is,
complaint triggers what now?
This constitutional speedy trial analysis. Okay. And so in Selvidge, this court said that a criminal complaint constitutes a formal charge. It can result in an arrest warrant. It can cause the person to be held and detained and arrested, as Mr. Clemens was in this case. The prejudice in this case, so if this court case did not address the constitutional speedy trial claim.
He wasn't arrested, though, for this.
Or
detained for this.
He was arrested.
But not for
when you get arrested by the police, they don't say you're arrested for this or you're arrested for that. You're arrested. The fact of the matter is he had multiple warrants pending. He had the warrant for the
and they didn't
case.
Even know about this one.
Well, right? I don't know that that's true, that they didn't know about it. First of all, it's in the system. It's hard to believe they didn't know about it. And actually, the record suggests they did know about it because...
Well, if we were to follow where you want us to go, then I suppose once that opinion comes out, there would be a fairly quick flushing of the system in Cuyahoga County. That is, all of these things that have laid around and languished are suddenly going to be on, they're going to be gone because of speedy trial. And from that point forward, I suppose there'll be a different way of doing business there.
Your Honor, I think that this is not a common occurrence. What happened here? What happened here is he was charged by criminal complaint, eventually arrested, held in Cuyahoga County Jail with this pending case. They don't do anything about it. They prosecute him on another case. He goes to prison, starts serving a sentence. They then prosecute him on a third case, unrelated case for which he's found not guilty. They send him back to prison. And then they wait to the day he's to be released from prison and pick him up that day. So I would suggest that this is a pretty uncommon occurrence. And what it suggests to me is not only inexcusable delay, the state has offered no justification or explanation for why they did nothing. In fact, they haven't demonstrated that they didn't know about this warrant. It's hard to believe since it's in a publicly available docket.
So if we agree with you with respect to this one client in this uncommon situation, what do we say in an opinion that doesn't tangle up all of these other floaters that are out there that have charges pending that they don't know about?
Well, Your Honor,
how do we address your issue and not affect literally thousands of people are walking around with pending charges that they haven't been to court for and in your view, don't know about?
Well, there's two answers to that. The first is all we're asking this court to do is reverse the 8th District and ask them to conduct a constitutional speedy trial analysis with the criminal complaint as the starting point. This case was not briefed and was not argued on the issue of whether or not the Court of Appeals erred in its analysis on the constitutional speedy trial claim. They essentially skipped over that because they did not believe that it was apt here because the criminal complaint did not trigger it. And so what we would be asking is that you send this back to the trial court, I mean to the Court of Appeals, to conduct a constitutional speedy trial analysis.
But Mr. Sweeney, isn't the speedy trial, I mean, isn't it bound up with the idea of a prejudice to the defendant? Isn't that the constitutional concern that we have, that someone has been arrested, is put in custody, and then the state delays in bringing the case to trial? Isn't that the whole purpose of the speedy trial? But here we're not talking about that situation. Where's the prejudice to your client at all?
Well, first of all, prejudice takes multiple forms, and in Barker and in subsequent cases, they talk about prejudice in the form of the ability to defend against a case that has become stale, and also oppressive pretrial incarceration. Here, both of those elements of prejudice apply. The first is a presumption of prejudice arises after 1 year. This court held that in Selvidge, and the Supreme Court held that in Doggett. And at that point, because it's difficult to articulate specific prejudice in every case, well, what does the loss of memory mean? You know, your ability to pursue an alibi, those types of things. The Supreme Court of the United States has said, after 1 year, there's a presumption of prejudice. That puts the issue in the state's court, and they can rebut that presumption. That's all it is.
And the 1 year does not begin when the defendant first appears in court, you're saying?
No, the 1 year begins when he's formally charged.
Have we said that specifically
in Selvidge? You said that specifically in Selvidge, that the appellee in that case was formally accused when appellant, the state, filed a criminal complaint.
But in that case, did the defendant become aware of that? Wasn't there a decision by the state not to proceed at some point to, and that was part of the Selvidge case, that there was almost an intent not to proceed?
And this is exactly analogous here. Here we have a complaint that sat on the shelf for 19 months.
Do you have the same thing where you have an intent not to proceed, or is that something that you're inferring?
I would
delay.
Say that we're inferring it from the record.
Okay.
And I think it's a fair inference because, again, the day he's released from prison, 19 months later, it's not like the state didn't know he had a warrant. They pick him up. They don't let him out. So they know he has a warrant. It's just sitting around for whatever reason, whether it's to make it more difficult for him, whether it's so that he serves the sentence without any possibility of getting potential concurrent sentences, which is one of the aspects of prejudice that's talked about by the Supreme Court. I don't know why they did what they did necessarily, but we do know that there was a warrant that sat on the shelf. The state knew about it, at least enough to pick the defendant up. Why did they do nothing for 19 months? Well, that's a good question. But
counsel, does it matter that the complaint was filed in municipal court?
It does not matter, no.
But why wouldn't that matter?
Because he's still been,
municipal court.
Question, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Your
Honor. The question for whether or not a constitutional speedy trial analysis is triggered is whether the defendant becomes accused, whether there's an official accusation in whatever form, whether it's an indictment, an information, a criminal complaint, regardless of the form it takes, that is the trigger point. And so the fact that it took place and that's common, that a case would originate in a municipal court, a criminal complaint, an arrest warrant, and then the state acts on it normally in some fashion, and it either gets bound over or directly indicted in a common pleas court. But it doesn't make any difference. The state is the state. You know, they bring the charges, and our client was charged
counsel,
on August 6th.
Counsel, I'd like to direct your attention to a different subject altogether. It seems to me the 8th District Court of Appeals has put a burden on you to prove your prejudice. And I'm just not sure this is as I understand it, a gunshot wound to a house. And it's 2 years later, and how do you meet the burden? They suggest that you're speculating about potential witnesses, faded memories, and they call that insufficient. Do you have a burden to demonstrate to the court your prejudice caused by the delay?
I would say yes and no. We do have the ultimate burden. We have a burden of demonstrating that the delay has been more than a year. At that point, a presumption of prejudice arises, at which point the state can rebut that presumption, or the trial court can hold a hearing and determine, look, every witness is here, you know, there's no question about
faded
memories.
Did that happen here? Did that happen in this case?
There was no hearing in this case. The defense asked for one, but the state did not, actually. They, in their response, they simply say, look, constitutional speedy trial analysis isn't appropriate here. And interestingly, their sole appeal to the 8th District is on pre-indictment delay. And it's that distinction between constitutional speedy trial analysis and pre-indictment or pre-charge delay that is confusing and perhaps confused the 8th District. Because the fact of the matter is, the defense below never argued pre-indictment delay, only argued constitutional speedy trial. That was the grounds for the trial court's ruling, and the state took up a different issue. And so I don't understand why that happened. The only thing I can say is that with pre-indictment delay, the burden to establish actual prejudice is on the defendant. With a constitutional speedy trial claim, that is not the case. Once you establish the delay exceeds 1 year, there's a presumption of prejudice that needs to be rebutted. Now the ball is in the state's court. Ultimately, we carry the burden with respect to demonstrating that these four Doggett factors weigh in favor of granting dismissal. We think that was here on the record, and given that the state made no attempt to rebut the prejudice, presumption of prejudice, and they did not ask for a hearing, we think the trial court acted properly in dismissing the case. At a minimum, if this court feels that the record is not fully developed and doesn't want to just send this case back to the Court of Appeals, it could send it to the trial court for a hearing if it feels that the state needs to be given a second opportunity that, frankly, they didn't ask for to demonstrate that there was no prejudice in this
counsel,
case.
Counsel, the fact that your client posted a bond and went capious, I'm quoting from the appellate decision, April 6, 2011, until he was ultimately apprehended and arrested again on July 10, 2012, over a year, has that anything to do with this?
It is a factor. I would agree with that. And so in Doggett, for instance...
So when Clemens filed a motion for to dismiss for want of prosecution, you would agree that he was responsible for the want of prosecution for well over a year?
I actually wouldn't agree with that. But what I'm... In this case, to explain it factually, what happened is he posted a bond in the Cleveland Municipal Court case. That case was dismissed. So at that point, they went and had him directly indicted in common pleas court. They sent a summons on that indictment to an address, and it was returned as is not the right address or not good service. And so he never had, as far as we know, I mean, now this wasn't fleshed out in the record, he never had notice that this felony charge was pending. He knows the Cleveland Municipal case is over. He had never received an indictment, as far as we can tell, that this charge was pending. So I don't know.
He wasn't told at a hearing in municipal court, we're dismissing it here, it's going to go to the...
There's no evidence of that fact.
Well, he posted a bond.
He did post a bond before the case was dismissed, yes.
And then went to Capias.
Yes.
And then, according to this appellate decision, it's described as, and then went Capias on April 6, 2011.
What I'm saying is that's not accurate, because there's the Cleveland Municipal case, which was dismissed. His capias was a result of the common pleas case where he does not show up to the arraignment because service was not good on the indictment. Those are two different cases, and I think they conflated the two together. But I will say that, let's say you take that time out, okay?
Let me just back you up a little bit here. He posted the bond. His case is dismissed, according to you, in his mind, in the municipal court. Did he get his bond back?
I do not know what the bond was. It could have been a personal bond. I don't know. But what I do know is this was not a bind over. So, you know, sometimes you would transfer the bond to common pleas court commonly. But here it was a dismissal of the Cleveland Municipal Court case and then a direct indictment. Now, there's not, and it's not, according to me, it was dismissed. The record demonstrates it was dismissed. There's no question it was dismissed. What he was told, whether he got notice of the indictment, I don't know. But, Your Honor, let's say you take that time out. You take that time out, you still have 3 years of delay on the part of the state, approximately 3 years. And in Doggett itself, where the Supreme Court found a constitutional speedy trial violation, the defendant in that case fled to Panama and was clearly responsible for the first 2.5 years of delay while he was in Central America. Nonetheless, they said, you take that time out, you still... The state can't explain why they didn't prosecute him with any diligence when he returned to the United States. So it's not like if there is some delay attributable to the defendant, that destroys the claim. It's just a factor that weighs into the whole analysis. And here we still have the first 19 months of inexplainable delay on the part of the state, 12 months of which they had physical custody of Marlon Clemens.
Mr. Sweeney, when are you claiming that Mr. Clemens first learned of the felony charge for discharging the firearm into a habitation?
Based on the record, Your Honor, there's no clear indication when he learned of it. I mean, clearly he knew.
You don't know when he learned of it.
What's that?
You don't know when he learned of it.
Are you saying he learned of it July 10th, 2012, when he got arrested? Was that his first clue?
Your Honor, I do not know, according to this record, which is not well developed. He clearly was arrested the day he left prison on the Cleveland Municipal case. But if you're talking about the common pleas case, there's no evidence he received notice of the indictment until he was arrested in July. Yes. Based on this record, that's all we know.
He obviously never asked to be prosecuted on it.
Well, it's not clear there was any detainer lodged against him at the institution. So, I mean, he can't ask for something he's not been told exists.
Well, would the statutory speedy trial rights run against him if he were held on another charge?
So we do raise the issue of statutory speedy trial in this case as an alternative. And we believe that he also, his statutory speedy trial rights were violated because he was arrested and there was a pending charge.
He wasn't held on that charge. He was held on a different charge.
Again, it's not, when you're arrested, you're arrested.
I understand that, but he wasn't held on that. He was indicted for the escape, and he was held on the escape. He was imprisoned on the escape, was
according
he not?
According to the statute does not make the fine distinction that Your Honor's making here. It's not up to the police or the prosecutor to say, we're going to hold you on charge one and not charge two. And the reason that is Your
is
Honor.
Is the record confused that your client was incarcerated for escape, or was he not?
No, he was.
Oh.
He pled guilty to attempted
escape.
So
he wasn't being incarcerated on the discharge of the firearm. He was incarcerated on the escape.
Your Honor, what I'm trying to explain.
I'm trying to make sure that I understand the facts correctly.
I would not disagree with you that the state only prosecuted him for one of two pending cases.
Okay.
At that time. I agree with that. Okay. But for statutory speedy trial purposes, the question is, do you have a pending charge, which he did, a criminal complaint, and have you been arrested?
All right.
And that's it. And in this case, the reason, when you have, it's not uncommon that a defendant would have multiple charges pending, and that makes the clock 270 days instead of 90. So it's not up to the state to pick and choose. If there's multiple warrants, then you got a 270-day clock to try them on. They failed to do that with respect to the statute.
I understand what you're arguing. Thank
okay.
you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Mr. Miranda.
Chief Justice O'Connor, may it please the court. My name is Anthony Miranda from Cuyahoga County, and on behalf of the state, we'd ask the court to affirm for two reasons. The first reason is that the issue raised today was not timely asserted in the lower court. And second, that the constitutional speedy trial rights do not start or the clock does not begin until there's an arrest in connection with the complaint or charge.
Counsel, is that what we said in the Selvidge?
Your Honor, I don't think this court reached that question in Selvidge. The court in Selvidge said the sole question, and that's the language the court uses, is whether or not the statute of limitations is dispositive to the constitutional speedy trial question. And the court answered that question in the negative and went on in dicta to state that the filing of a complaint starts the speedy trial clock. But I think there are also facts that distinguish Selvidge from this one. The court notes in Selvidge the lower court's finding of substantial prejudice in that case because the defendant lacked a sufficient memory of the crime. That's a fact that this court doesn't have before it because the 8th District specifically held that the claims of actual prejudice were vague and speculative.
Counsel, isn't that a problem, though? It seems to me in this case that a burden has been put on the defendant to establish prejudice. And when the defendant, and I don't mean to be demeaning, but this is a gunshot to a house case. So the evidence obviously is going to change over 3 years. Memories are going to change over 3 years. Doesn't the Court of Appeals need a hearing before they put that burden on the defendant saying, well, you're vague, we don't know what you're talking about?
Well, I would submit that under the pre-indictment due process analysis, that burden is on the defendant to show that the delay in the prosecution has caused some actual harm.
Did they ask for a hearing?
I don't know if the defense asked for a hearing.
Well, your learned co-counsel or opposing counsel says a hearing was asked for, and I guess that's the question I'm asking you is, how can you put a burden on a defendant who has asked for a hearing to demonstrate his prejudice and then find, well, one, there's not going to be a hearing, and two, you haven't shown me any prejudice?
Well, I would say first, I don't think that the argument raised now is the argument that defendant raised below. And so I think that in and of itself should, the court should find that the argument's been forfeited, even if appellant raised a speedy trial.
Well, humor me for a moment and assume we're going to hear it.
If the court finds that defendant was denied a hearing, I think that the defendant should have raised that issue in the 8th District. That issue wasn't raised. And in fact, the 8th District merit brief submitted by appellant indicates that the issue is really one of tactical pre-indictment delay. And that's a phrase used throughout appellant's merit brief in the 8th District.
Counsel, on the waiver issue, did you raise that in your memorandum, in your response to the appellant's memorandum in support of jurisdiction?
No.
And did you respond when they asked for reconsideration of our denial of jurisdiction?
I don't think the state responded to the motion to reconsideration.
Wouldn't that have been a good time for the state to have raised the waiver issue so that we didn't take the case in?
It certainly would have been a good time, Your Honor. The state did move the court to dismiss the case, I think, based on the forfeiture argument. I think the fact that the complaint issue being raised in the proposition of law isn't really argued anywhere below does mean that the court would be within its right to find that this is improvidently granted. Because there really, I think, as the questioning has shown, there really isn't much of a record for this court to reach the issue presented today.
But your friends on the other side say all we really want is a remand. We just want a remand back to the 8th District to say, all we want this court to say is the complaint triggers the constitutional analysis, triggers the analysis. So don't we have enough to at least do that?
Well, this court can answer that question now in the negative and find that the complaint doesn't start the speedy trial clock. And I think that's the correct holding, because a complaint is not the vehicle by which...
It's not considered a person being accused of a crime by a complaint. That's not what you would say a complaint is.
Correct.
What is a complaint, then, if it's not accusing someone of a crime?
Your Honor, I think in the context of felonies, a complaint is a vehicle to secure an arrest warrant and to bring someone...
How come you arrest somebody if you're not accusing them of a crime?
Well, Your Honor, I don't think they stand accused until there is a indictment or information, because those are the vehicles by which, under the criminal rules, we prosecute felonies in Ohio. And I would admit that once somebody's arrested in connection with the complaint, they're suffering a physical restraint on their liberty, and that would start the speedy trial clock.
Are you saying jeopardy does not attach with the filing of a complaint?
Your Honor, jeopardy might, but I think that's a separate analysis from statutory speedy trial, which is designed to guard against physical confinement, somebody languishing away in jail pending the trial, and that's...
Well, it's designed to do a lot more than that, and you just had a lengthy discussion of that. It's designed to allow both sides to be in court and present evidence before it's stale, before people have disappeared, before people have forgotten. So once you've got him in court, what's the excuse for not presenting all the claims and having him, the defendant, having the opportunity to defend all of them and as in 95% of the cases, work out a plea bargain that covers all of the pending charges that you have against this defendant? What's the excuse for not having a house cleaning with respect to this defendant at one place, at one time?
Your Honor, the state certainly has no excuse. There was a delay here of, I believe, from August 2009 to...
Well, then why don't you fix it instead of coming to the Supreme Court? You can do that.
Well, because, Your Honor, I don't think that the delay violated the Constitution, and the court references the issues of pre-indictment delay, but those concerns, I think, are separate from the concerns of speedy trial. Speedy trial, I think, is guarding against physical restraints, guarding against imposition while somebody is waiting for trial, whereas pre-indictment delay is concerned with what evidence have you lost because the state waited. And here, the 8th District found there was no lost evidence.
Counsel, that ignores the realities of speedy trial doesn't just apply to people who are in jail. That's why we have the 3-for-1 rule. Speedy trial on a statutory basis says, state, if you got a case, bring it forward or the time is going to run out on you.
Yes, Your Honor. But for instance, the United States Supreme Court in Barker versus Wingo enumerates a number of factors that the reasons supporting the speedy trial clause, loss of employment that might occur because of this pending charge, disruption of your family life, anxiety. None of these apply here. Defendant says he didn't even know the complaint had been filed. And we don't see what why this is suddenly not a pre-indictment case.
Well, apparently he wasn't the only one that didn't know it. Apparently the prosecutor that had the other case didn't know it.
Right?
That it must be how you have this mess in the first place.
Your Honor, there's no doubt the state could have handled this situation better. It's negligent at best. There's no evidence in the record that this was intentional. And I think that analysis only matters if the court decides to apply the speedy trial test, because under pre-indictment delay, defendant first has to show that the delay has prejudiced him in some way. And defendant does not challenge the Eighth District's finding that there was no actual prejudice below.
Is your opposing counsel correct that after 1 year there is a presumption of prejudice?
Your Honor, there may be a presumption after 1 year. There's no bright line rule that every year-long delay will be a constitutional.
So what would you like the Supreme Court of Ohio to say? No prejudice at 1 year, 2 years, or 3 years?
Well, I would first like the Supreme Court to say that the complaint doesn't start the speedy trial clock.
You would.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
You would.
I would. I would like the court to say that the complaint in connection with an arrest on that complaint starts the speedy trial
clock. So that the Cleveland police could file or cause to be filed a complaint today and begin the prosecution 5 years from now? Would that comport with your rule?
If the defendant were never arrested,
yes.
In your hypothetical,
yes,
Your Honor.
And that's okay?
Assuming this is a felony and not a misdemeanor, I think that's an important distinction.
Crime. Let's just call it a crime. So they file a complaint in court and they do nothing for 5 years, and then they go knock on the door and say, by the way, what were you doing in July of 2003? Get your defense ready.
If under those set of facts the defendant can't point to actual prejudice, then I don't think a constitutional violation has occurred.
Really?
That's not the best police work. I think the state should strive to do better, but the Constitution analyzes that delay under the due process, and I respectfully submit that question is, what prejudice have you suffered in the presentation of your defense?
But isn't it also the duty of the state? Aren't we talking about the duty of the state once the criminal process starts? And I think we've said in other cases that once you have a complaint filed, the process has started. Isn't there an obligation by the state to be aware that the process has started and must continue, or there's going to be automatic prejudice to the defendant?
I disagree with that slightly, because I think it assumes that the complaint starts the speedy trial clock, and certainly the filing of the complaint is a charge. It is
an accusation.
It may be, Your Honor, but I don't think it's an official accusation of a felony in Ohio. There has to be some later accusation, an indictment or an information. The municipal court here could not have tried the felonies in this case.
So if there's an indictment or information, does that start the speedy trial clock?
Yes, absolutely.
All right.
Or if defendant were arrested on the complaint or came to court on the complaint, now the defendant has triggered the speedy trial clock by suffering some sort of restraint or actual restraint of his liberty.
So what does the complaint do in your view then? What's the significance, legal significance of a complaint?
Your Honor, in the speedy trial context, I think the complaint is the statement of facts sufficient to procure an arrest warrant, but that the speedy trial clock doesn't start until that arrest warrant is actually.
You're distinguishing the complaint from the information and the indictment.
Correct, because under Crim Rule 7, felonies have to be prosecuted in Ohio by indictment and information. And we respectfully submit that the filing of the complaint, especially where the defendant has no alleges he has no notice of it, does not change this case from a pre-indictment delay case where defendant has to show actual prejudice.
I'm not sure I understand your answer to Justice Lansinger. Is the filing of a complaint the initiation of proceedings?
Is Your Honor asking, I would submit
I'm just working with the English language here. Is it the initiation of proceedings?
It's initiating of proceedings, I would admit. I don't think that question really helps us to determine whether or not it's an official accusation under the federal speedy trial clause or the Ohio speedy trial clause.
Well, it just seems to me that the 8th District Court of Appeals has taken upon themselves to say that there must be prejudice shown, and that's good. That's a good law. But it seems to me we have to have a starting point at some point. And I'm asking you, once the police go to court, is that the initiation of proceedings?
I would admit that the filing of a complaint is the initiation of prosecution, but I don't think it is the start of the speedy trial clock.
Why did you change words on me?
The initiation of proceedings.
Okay.
The United States Supreme Court, I'm reading from the appellate decision, held that the speedy trial clause of the Sixth Amendment does not apply to the period before a defendant is indicted, arrested, or otherwise officially accused. And that's the Marion case from the United States Supreme Court. And the Eighth District says the Ohio Supreme Court held that where a defendant is not subject to any official prosecution, a delay between the offense and the commencement of prosecution is not protected by the speedy trial. But I don't think that's necessarily on point to what we're talking about here, is a delay between the offense and the commencement of prosecution. Would you agree that the filing of the complaint is a commencement of prosecution?
I would, for purposes of statute of limitations, certainly, but I don't think that answers the speedy trial
question.
Okay,
so if we go back to then the United States Supreme Court opinion that says it does not apply before a defendant is indicted, arrested, or otherwise officially accused, what method could you officially accuse someone other than an indictment or an arrest?
Well, I think an information certainly would be one method.
Okay.
I don't know. Within federal law, I think they mostly deal with indictments. So
you're saying then that does not contemplate a complaint that is filed and an arrest warrant that is precipitated as a result of the information in that complaint. That does not, in your position is, does not fall within the otherwise officially accused column.
That's correct.
All right, and that's the difference, I think, the crux of the difference between you and your opposing counsel.
I think that's accurate, yes, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Sweeney, you've used your time. You may take 30 seconds.
I will. Thank you, Your Honor. I just asked this court to look at the attachment to appellee's motion for reconsideration in the Court of Appeals. It has a copy of the criminal complaint here. Complaint for discharging a firearm, cites the felony section that it's accused of violating. There's a signature by the prosecuting attorney of the city of Cleveland and the Cleveland municipal clerk. It lays out the elements of the offense, the dates on which he's accused of committing it. I don't know how you could construe this other than the government is saying you committed a crime. In fact, if I asked any average person what this meant, that is what it would mean. And this court also held in Selvidge, they try to characterize this as dicta. I don't understand it. This court, that was a speedy trial case, and this court picked the trigger date being the criminal complaint. You would have to overrule Selvidge and say that a criminal complaint does not constitute a formal charge to affirm the Eighth District. And Your Honors, I respectfully submit that this court should not do that and should reverse the Eighth District's decision in this case.
Thank you,
Your Honor.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement, gentlemen. You'll be notified of our decision.